And we continue at 2:07 in the afternoon. Talk Radio 790 KABC, The John Phillips Show. Broadcasting live in exile from the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Living Room Studios. And it's time to fully reopen the state of California for business. Mr. Randy Wang's at the sports desk in Culver City.
John, after covering the fake doctor for so many years here on KABC, there are certain things in a Barber for Rare press conference you just come to expect. And I'm sure people were wondering if it happened this time. And yes, it did. Once again, Barber for Rare misgendered Ron Lynn.
Thanks, Ron.
She keeps calling him Rhonda.
Thanks, Ron.
Unless she knows something that we don't, Ron Lynn is a male in San Francisco, who works for the LA Times.
Thanks, Rhonda.
She calls him Rhonda.
Maybe she's a big fan of the Beach Boys.
Thanks, Rhonda.
800-222-KABC is the telephone number, 1-800-222-5222. Well, despite what you see on television, on so many of those murder mystery programs, if there is a murder that takes place, the people that solve it are usually the cops. Because when it comes to finding the real killer, OJ only has so many hours in the day.
What's going on, America?
And he's got to go have brunch in Vegas.
That's true. Right next to me. But listen to this. Unsolved murder rates, or the unsolved murder rate in the United States, is now the highest it's been in decades because police staffing is not where it should be. There's been a bunch of shortfalls. The murder clearance rate, the share of cases that are solved or closed for other reasons, has fallen to its lowest point in more than half a century as underfunded and understaffed police departments across the country struggle to keep up. We know that they've stopped showing up when Walgreens gets robbed, or when your mail gets stolen, or when your Amazon packages are taken. But it's not just low-level crimes that are going unsolved. Now, murders are also going unsolved. Joining us to talk about this is a woman who has written about this extensively over at City Journal. She's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of the book, The War on Cops, available online at Amazon.com. You can follow her on Twitter at HMD at MI. Heather McDonald, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me on, John.
Heather, there are real-world consequences for defunding police departments and also for letting the police departments know that you don't have their back. What the public ends up getting is poor results.
Yes, and another reason why the clearance rates are so low is that when you continuously demonize the cops, as Joe Biden did during his presidential campaign, as he did on his inauguration night, as he did in his first speech, as he continued to do thereafter, with the phony narrative that police are gunning down blacks in an epidemic of unjustified police shootings. This is not true when you take crime into account. Whites are actually killed by the cops at a rate that would not be predicted by their crime numbers, and blacks are not being killed. They are being undershot, to be brutal about it, when you look at their rate of violent crime and their rate of assaults on officers. But when you continue to say that the police are racist, they're a scourge on the black community, the already very low rate of witness cooperation plummets further. You know, cops will say they could solve every inner city murder if the witnesses or the victims would cooperate with the police. And instead, you know, they get to the murder scene and nobody's seen anything. And they go to the hospital, the victim's been shot, he's not going to talk to the police. So, yes, the defunding, which didn't happen in an actual fiscal way, to the extent that Republicans were sort of demagoguing it, the real issue was the phony narrative that has demoralized the cops and has led to massive attrition from police forces. And so cops, the forces are stretched way, way thin, and then they're being told not to go after the low-level offenses, which are the way you stop higher crime from happening.
And if you show up, if you're the cops and you show up after a murder has taken place, you are at a strategic disadvantage. One of the things that the cops have been told to back off on are proactive policing, things like stop and frisk, being well known in neighborhoods, having well-established relationships with people in neighborhoods. This was something that really happened in the 1990s, thanks to people like Rudy Giuliani and Bill Bratton, and here in Los Angeles, Dick Reardon and others. When the cops showed up, they knew who was having a problem with who. And they had a baseline of knowledge that allowed them to connect dots that they wouldn't otherwise connect. But when you tell the cops to back off with proactive policing and no more stop and frisk and just stay in the car and wave, what you're doing is you're putting them behind the eight ball when it comes time to solve the murder.
Absolutely. And, you know, it turns out that somebody who's going to commit a drive-by shooting isn't exactly scrupulous about obeying lower-level laws. So that guy is also going to be turnstile jumping, whether it's in L.A. or New York City or Chicago. He's going to be getting on buses and refusing to pay. He's going to be littering. He's going to be spraying graffiti. And so what the cops have found, not only is that low-level so-called quality of life or broken windows enforcement essential for the sanity of a neighborhood and for the sense that people have living there that the place is not descending into complete anarchy, but those low-level stops, whether or not the cop makes an arrest or not, or issues a summons, which is not always necessary, but they end up stopping people who are out on warrants, who are warrant absconders, who are wanted and who are probably looking to commit their next crime. And it is a good thing to have a little, you know, how are you guy touch that the cops are aware of who you are.
We're speaking with Heather McDonald, who you can follow on Twitter at HMD@MI. Heather, I've watched enough Lifetime Television for Women movies to know that when you're dealing with murders, typically it's people that know one another. It's a husband murdering a wife murdering a husband, children murdering the parents, parents murdering the children, people you know, people in your immediate circles. That's typically where the crime comes from when you're talking specifically about domestic problems, but just in general.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
When you have a sense of lawlessness that's out there, though, where people just don't feel like they have to follow any rules at all, and there are random acts of violence where people are getting pushed in front of moving subways, people are being shot for no reason, the victim doesn't even know the criminal doesn't know the victim, that makes it infinitely harder for the cops to solve the crime when there's nothing tying the two people together outside of just someone waking up one morning deciding they're going to murder a random person.
Right. I would very much distinguish domestic violence with the vast bulk of shootings in the United States. The vast bulk of shootings in the United States are inner city gangbangers. Domestic violence, you know, the LAPD, starting like 10 years ago, was moving more and more detectives onto its domestic violence desk, way out of proportion to the problem, motivated by the pressures coming from city council, from Sacramento, you know, to protect women, except when women get shot in drive-by shootings. So that's really, let's not pretend that domestic violence is the source of America's outsized gun violence problem. The problem is the breakdown of cultural norms in the inner city. But yes, it's the random violence that really scares people, because let's be honest, there's some kind of inchoate sense that I think Americans have, which partly explains why there's so little media coverage to the dozens of blacks who are killed every single day in the United States. Part of the reason for that, but only part, is that the other Americans kind of understand that this is something that is happening within a very particular community and doesn't put them at risk. But when you then have those bullets going astray, people being pushed into subway tracks, there's a sense of, hey, wait a minute, we didn't bargain for this. You know, we've been playing by the rules. We're trying to raise our kids right. We believe in bourgeois values, and that earns us no sense of safety, as it should. None of us should ever put up with crime. And every politician who knows about the daily lootings, the mass lootings, the shootings that are going on in Los Angeles and New York, at this point, they are all complicitous. Because the only thing they should be talking about right now is how to protect people's property, how to protect people's expectation of safety. They are on notice, and they're not doing it. That makes them, I would say, co-responsible for what's going on.
The way that the media reports on violence has, or crime, I guess I should say, in recent years has become more and more political, where you look at stories about a crime that is unsolved, and there are some newspapers, including, I think, the big one in Austin, Texas, where they have determined that they are no longer going to give you a physical description of the suspect, a suspect that the cops are looking for, that certainly the victims want to be placed into custody. But they are no longer going to give you a physical description of the suspect because they deem that to be racist. The Democrats are also pushing local news outlets to not lead with crime, to not play crime stories up so high, because they think that it makes the public believe that they live in a violent city, they live in a violent state, and it makes them place crime higher up on the list of other subjects that Democrats want them to be paying attention to, like global warming and those sorts of things. Do you think the media is going to stand firm on this and say, no, if the lead story is a murder in our city, we're going to report on the murder? Or do you think they're going to crumble to these politically correct woke requests from the left?
Well, I don't quite get your time frame, John, because you're projecting this into the future. It has already happened. I don't know a single newspaper that reports the race of a suspect unless that suspect is white. It's a virtual rule. If you get a crime report and the race of the suspect isn't reported, it's a black suspect, because if the suspect were white, we would know about it. That's been going on for a long time, and the more recent development, places like the San Francisco Chronicle stopped publishing mugshots of people who'd been arrested because they were so overwhelmingly black. And again, I'm just talking about the statistics here. In New York City, for example, blacks and Hispanics commit about 97-96% of all drive-by shootings. Whites commit about 1% of all drive-by shootings in New York City. L.A. has a much smaller black population, but the disparities are just as great. I mean, blacks commit about 40% of the violent crime in L.A., even though I believe they're, 9% of the population. So this is just what the reality is, and the victimization rates are just as skewed. Blacks between the ages of 10 and 24 die of gun homicide at 25 times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined between the ages of 10 and 24. So these crime figures, sorry, folks, it's what the data shows us. It's what the bodies show us. The media will not report it because they are absolutely ideologically opposed to anything that interrupts their narrative that the problem of violence in this country is one of white supremacists. It is not. It's inner city violence that makes America a violent country.
Heather McDonald, fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of the book The War on Cops, available online at Amazon.com. You can follow her on Twitter at HMD@MI. Heather McDonald, thanks so much for stopping by. Have yourself a very wonderful weekend.
Thank you. I shall, John. I'll try.
Okay, good deal. If you want to email the show, you can do so at johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. That's johnnydontlikeshow@gmail.com. Yesterday, we opened up the KABC Crime Blotter and told you about an attorney who lives in the Hollywood Hills who brought two women home that he met at the bars for a three-way, and they ended up drugging him and robbing him, and he felt victimized by the whole situation and decided to go on the news and talk about it.
And he's the one alleging that he was drugged. We don't have any proof of that, but sure, no. We'll take him at his word.
He just could have been drunk.
The next thing I know, it's the next day, 15 hours later. I woke up with a massive headache. My body was aching.
Yeah, that's not being drugged. That's drinking the entire...
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
A bottle of vodka.
Well, the Daily Mail has found pictures of the two women that did it. And I've got to tell you, they both look like they have fleas.
If you saw these women on the street, you would definitely think prostitutes.
Oh, yeah. Not just prostitutes, but real low-end prostitutes.
And so far, Channel 5 is the only news network that has done this story. Hopefully, the other stations pick this up and do their own anonymous interview with this guy that thinks he's saving other men out there. But the comments on KTLA's YouTube page about this story of the Hollywood Hills man who got drugged and robbed by two women are pretty fantastic. Like this one. Just drive to Nevada where there's legal prostitution. I read that he's a lawyer. He must have graduated from the Three Stooges Law School, a million-dollar home with very valuable items inside and letting two strangers inside your home. The Darwin Award. Shows how insecure men can be. He's a wealthy attorney living in the Hollywood Hills, and he's still bringing home street urchins.
I just saw two more pictures of them. And the one with the tongue ring, in every picture I've seen, she's got the tongue out of her mouth like she's Gene Simmons at Kiss.
Braces, shoulder tattoos, glasses, tongue rings. What the hell was this guy thinking? No wonder he didn't show his face. Embarrassing.
And I've got these pictures on my laptop. One of them has boobs that are so big and out there, I think they just smacked me in the face.
What in the world possessed him to take these two girls back home?
Well, I've got two reasons staring me in the face right now.
Let's be honest. He thought he was going to get lucky that night and thinking with, well, you know what he was thinking with. Yeah, it was wrong what happened to him, but he brought it on himself. Must have been really drunk to bring two roadkill home. Oh, the internet can be brutal.
I don't know how an educated person could look at these two and not come to the conclusion that they're going to both drug and rob you.
Well, some people are book smart. Some people are street smart. Some people are both. This man is not.
He also is now claiming, or at least the Daily Mail is claiming, that the women are part of a criminal operation, part of a crime ring, where this is what they do. They promise lonely men a three-way. They go back home with them, and then they drug and rob them. This is just what their occupation is.
Yeah, but who's the one that invited them into the house with the Rolexes that he definitely showed off to them in an effort to get them both in the bedroom?
The victim said the women were believed to be transients, excuse me.
Different story.
God, I need my glasses.
He was in Beverly Hills, not East Hollywood.
The victim said...
Transient. Got to put the ent on there, John.
Whoa, that story almost just took a whole different direction. The victim said the women were believed to be transients.
Apparently, what the police have told me, these two women are transients.
Or members of a crime network who target and rob people. Transients.
Well,
transients.
If they're targeting, they found the biggest buffoon in Beverly Hills.
They found a mark, all right. Which means it's time to open up the KABC crime blotter.
Oh, and the blotter's full today. After some crafty criminals figured out the easiest way to get past a security door and into an ATM is to use a van.
Uh-oh.
New at 10, a damaged ATM outside an Oakland convenience store after what...
Of course, this is Oakland.
I know.
New at 10, a damaged ATM outside an Oakland convenience...
Why do you think the Raiders moved?
You know, I'll tell you how bad Oakland is. The Raiders moved and crime went up.
New at 10, a damaged ATM outside an Oakland convenience store after what neighbors describe as a brazen burglary. We're told it's the third time thieves have targeted the location, but this time photos...
At what point do you move?
But this
Well, you can't move an ATM. Well, I guess you can if you run it over with a van.
But this time, photos posted to social media show that it was an SUV thieves used to get inside. KTVU's Amber Lee is live now in Oakland with why neighbors say they are especially frustrated. Amber?
Jenna, the owner tells me the thieves each time have targeted the ATM inside the store. Now, neighbors say they're frustrated and they're questioning the police response.
A lot of glass. You could hear the glass shattering.
Witnesses tell me they were awakened by a burglary about 4:15 Monday morning at the Quick Stop on the corner of Merritt and Brooklyn Avenues, just steps from Lake Merritt.
You imagine what that must have sounded like at 1 in the morning? An SUV going through glass into an ATM.
You know, and if you live in certain parts of Oakland, you probably hear that every morning.
Just steps from Lake Merritt. These photos posted to social media show the black SUV used by the thieves to deliberately crash into the store.
Oh my God, it's in the whole store.
Was the cashier harmed at all?
The cashier was not harmed.
If the cashier is dummy.
Because I think the cashier was at home and the store was closed. But, okay, we have to figure out here who gets the best live reaction to a violent video award.
Oh, my God, it's in the whole store.
Or.
No.
I know.
I got to give it to the two ladies from Reseda.
Yeah, they are perennial winners.
No.
I know.
Oh, my God, it's in the whole store.
It's not just in... How did it get past the bollards?
You know what? This woman's asking the right questions.
She is. I like the how she's thinking it through out loud.
How did it get past the bollards?
Witnesses say the thieves moved the ATM outside the store. But because of the red safety bollards out front, the driver had difficulty backing the SUV out. A second man was seen yelling directions.
Let's clear out traffic so we can get the SUV that we've loaded the ATM onto out of here.
Did they have any orange cones? Did they have to flash a flashlight, telling other cars where to go? Hey, get out of the way here. We've got a stolen ATM coming out.
Okay, you obviously can't back up properly. You don't know how to use a reverse camera, so let me get in there. I'll do it. I'll get around the bollards.
The guy who was standing on the side yelling, he was a big fella. The guy who was standing on the side yelling, he was a big fella with a strong voice, but totally covered, so you wouldn't be able to identify them.
You mean he was wearing a mask?
I love the fact that she's calling him fat. And that's the only description that she's given us.
The guy who was standing on the side yelling, he was a big fella.
We got an APB for a big fella wandering around Oakland screaming at people how to drive.
The guy who was standing on the side yelling, he was a big fella with a strong voice, but totally covered, so you wouldn't be able to identify them.
Neighbors say the three burglars were still there when police arrived, but that they fled in a second vehicle.
I was shocked because the police didn't follow.
I'm not shocked at all.
Yeah, they've given up on that sort of thing a long time ago.
So these guys are taking their sweet-ass time when they have a second getaway car, trying to back the SUV out because it's stuck in between the store and the bollards. They're taking so long that the police in Oakland finally arrive. Then they ditch the car, and Oakland police is like, yeah, they learned their lesson.
I was shocked because the police didn't follow. And I thought, what the heck why aren't the police following them?
It's a very astute observation there.
Do they have one of the Soros DAs in Alameda County?
And I thought, what the heck why aren't the police following them?
Oakland police policy says vehicle pursuits may only be initiated when there is reasonable suspicion to believe the involved individuals committed a violent, forcible crime.
And driving through a store to steal an ATM doesn't meet that standard?
Oh, no. See, they just thought it was a drive-through window. And since there wasn't a lane, they had to make one.
Vehicle pursuits may only be initiated when there is reasonable suspicion to believe the involved individuals committed a violent, forcible crime and or a crime involving the use of a firearm. Or if there is a reason to believe the person has a firearm.
And using a car as a weapon doesn't count for any of that. So, hey, I guess they don't have any high-speed chases up there in Oakland.
I wonder what the defense would be. I mistook the gas pedal for the brake, and I figured, well, I'm here anyway, so why not just rob the ATM?
I'm going to need some money for these car repairs, and I saw an ATM right there, and I said, why not?
I live right here. I'm really glad this store is right here because I can, you know, if I need to run out and get something, I can get it. And they keep getting robbed all the time.
The owner tells me this is the third time his store has been broken into during the past 2 years, but says each time they didn't get away with any money. Neighbors say this latest burglary is unsettling.
Listen, I'm a 55-year-old strong black man. I don't leave the house at night because you know what? I don't want to get jacked up.
Now that is some advice you can take with you this holiday season.
Listen, I'm a 55-year-old strong black man. I don't leave the house at night because you know what? I don't want to get jacked up. Listen.
I think this guy might be making the wall.
You think so?
I don't want to get jacked up.
You know what? That sounds way too close to something else. I'm going to skip it.
Neighbors tell me they're concerned that this type of crime will continue to happen since the thieves were at the scene when police responded, and they still managed to get away. Jenna?
I feel for that store owner, Amber Lee in Oakland. Thank you so much.
Oh, the fake sympathy. It's not a local news story without it.
Now, I don't want a victim blame at all. But if you own a shop in Oakland, you just have to assume it's baked into the cake that you're going to get robbed every other Tuesday.
I mean, this is the consensus of the constituents of Oakland.
Listen, I'm a 55-year-old strong black man. I don't leave the house at night because you know what? I don't want to get jacked up.
former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.